This episode is brought to you by Habit Aware. My Keen 2 brings awareness to my trichotillomania by giving my wrist a gentle hug or vibration when I'm doing the scanning behavior. Bring awareness into your life by visiting barbaralally.com/habitaware and use code LALLYLOVE for 10% off the replacement training bundle.
Well, my name is Jennifer. I live in Indiana. I'm a mom and wife and work as a patient advocate and have for many years. I was 13 years old when I began pulling. I pulled only at that point from the top of my head. So kind of that, what we see is that typical almost male pattern baldness type of pulling. And honestly, at first, it felt more to me like an interesting hobby. When it first started, when I was 13, I remember kind of liking the sensation of the pull and, you know, the examining the root and the curl of the hair, and to the point where I have memories of showing my sister one of those early hairs and saying, "Isn't this cool? Look at that." It really wasn't until my behavior was put up against the outside world's observation of it that it became kind of a, this is a problem. So started early, obviously disruptive to my life, as I know it is for so many others. But here I am 30 years later and still standing. So that says something.
I can relate to, I love doing it. I love the feeling of it. I don't love the aftermath that much. But while I'm in that trance, I love how it feels. I love the root. Do you do the lip thing? Do you rub it across your lips at all?
I do. It was one of those where I examined it, you know, there's the good ones, you know, I remember kind of thinking like, oh, that was a good one. That was a perfect one. And if you got a perfect one, then absolutely, I would want to feel that against my lips and play with it a little bit, pull the root off, discard it, and we move on often to many more. It's interesting that you said that about enjoying the behavior and kind of the self-soothing aspect of it. I don't know much about autism and would never put myself as an expert of any kind related to that. But one thing that's always kind of come to mind is it almost seems like the rocking behavior in autism, where you're just trying to self-soothe. There's something happening with your nervous system and you're just looking for some way to kind of self-soothe. And that's how it always kind of felt to me once I got old enough to really start thinking about it.
I've met with people who they view their trichotillomania, they have autism, and they view it strictly as a stim. They just treat it as a stim because for them, it is that self-soothing sensation.
Oh, interesting. I would love to hear more about that sometime. Just that kind of the differences, because I'm just starting to kind of compare this with other things. And it's interesting to kind of think about that cross-reference.
When did you find out there was a name for the behavior you were doing?
I remember it so vividly. I was 19 years old, and this was now 6 years into pulling. This was surviving high school, which is dreadful anyway, in a lot of ways, and even more so when you're trying to hide hair loss from your 16 and 17 year old friends. So I had already kind of gotten through that. It felt fairly traumatic. It then got worse for me as I went into college, and now I'm living in close quarters with others that aren't my immediate family. I have a roommate. I have people who are living on my dorm floor. And suddenly for me, the mental health aspect, even outside of trichotillomania, I started experiencing other mental health issues and went on just a mad search. And so I remember, and this was back, I'm going to date myself a bit, this would have been, you know, 1996 or seven, that I went to the dorm computer lab. I certainly didn't have a cell phone, didn't have a computer in my dorm room, went down to the room and I Googled hair pulling. I think I Googled it. I don't remember at the time if that was the thing or if I somehow I searched hair pulling and this word came up. I didn't know how to pronounce it. I couldn't have spelled it again had you said it, but it was the most comforting word I had ever seen in my entire life because it meant there was a name and it meant there were enough other people who had that behavior that they decided to name it. And that was huge for me.
Yeah, why do they have to have such a long, huge name? I understand it, but like,
Right.
yeah.
And does it have to have mania on the end? I have bipolar disorder as well. So, we have those manic episodes, and it's kind of, man, if I have one more thing with the word mania on the end of it, I could live without that.
After you found out there was a name for it, did you seek out help from a therapist or psychiatrist?
Yeah, I think that was the next level of disappointment for me almost. So it was kind of level one was, what is this thing I'm doing and why can't I stop? Then we have a name for it. And suddenly it's, yes, I win. That's the biggest part of it was finding out what it was and learning that I wasn't alone. And then it turned out, oh no, I'm just getting started. There's no cure. There's no real treatment in a way that you're going to walk into somebody's office in the mid-90s and say, I have this thing. And they're going to say, lucky you said that. Here's a medication for you. Or so of course I went through cognitive behavioral therapy and years of talk therapy, and it was helpful. There have been a number of tools that now, as a 45-year-old woman, I have in my toolbox, that I take out all the time when I'm managing this behavior. But at the time, it was nothing really seemed to work. I was looking for a cure. I was looking for a let me go in, sit with a therapist. They'll help me work through some particular trauma that I didn't know existed, or I'll learn some tool to be able to completely, get rid of this. And it helped me manage it. But as long as I was looking for a cure and not tools to manage a chronic condition, I was left disappointed. So yes, saw therapists, wore scarves, used fidget toys, identified tracked behavior so that I could identify locations and triggers and kind of work around them. And as I said, they all have their place and they all work in certain situations. But trichotillomania is so complex that I have gone so far as I'm identifying all these triggers, and it's like five or six of them, right? And so it just depends on the one that hits you. And if it falls into this category, a fidget toy, it very likely will work. In another situation, just putting a scarf on my head and becoming more aware, that's going to help in that moment. But there are others where I don't care what scarf or fidget toy you hand me, I'm going in the bathroom for a good hour and a half, and I'll see you on the other side of it, and we'll see what I got left. So, probably as frustrating as most people, you kind of go through all the things of what are the cures, what do I do, and you kind of get to it. Get through it. And at least my experience was, as long as I was looking for a quick cure, I was going to be disappointed.
I felt the exact same way, and it really hindered my healing process because I wasn't able to enjoy the success I had managing with the strategies. I
Yes.
was like, oh, I'm still pulling a hair. I'm still the worst.
Yes. Progress, not perfection. We don't give ourselves credit for it. Absolutely.
Were you ever misdiagnosed?
Yes, it's hard for me to start teasing apart the different reasons I've presented in psychiatrist offices. Definitely, the first time I ever went into a therapist's office, I had already self-diagnosed. I had already done the search, found the thing. I read it, and you might as well have just been talking about me. I didn't need someone to confirm that I had trichotillomania. I read the description and was it was a, the light bulb that went off, right? So when I went in, it was showing the therapist, here, this is what I have. Now, what I'll say is for a decade and a half, I was misdiagnosed based on how I would present. So if I presented super anxious, that I was on kind of the high end of what turned out to be most likely bipolar disorder, I would be diagnosed with anxiety. I would be giving an anti-anxiety medication with the hopes that that would help with the pulling. And there were times when I did have periods that I wasn't pulling. It's hard to tell whether those were periods where I was having high motivation or if the medication really did take the edge off so that I could use some of my tools. It's kind of really hard to say. But there are other times when I would present in more of a depression kind of phase, just sad, right? Because I think anyone who has trichotillomania can relate to is you have this period where you're pulling and there are these trance-like states. And you're seeing the progress that you've made over days or weeks or months just vanish. It's so disheartening. It's so frustrating. And you get to the end of it, and I wouldn't be able to get out of bed for a few days. I felt like I got hit by a truck. I was exhausted. And so, if it was at that point that I walked into a therapist's office, I was going to be diagnosed with depression and given an antidepressant. The problem with that for me was it spun. If you have someone who also struggles with mania and you give them an antidepressant, it can spin you up out of control. So, in terms of misdiagnosis, yes, I've heard it said that the brain is the only organ that we treat without imaging, doing any sort of testing. We rely on people to self-diagnose and self-report, and we diagnose and we try the best we can. But I think that's where we're at.
I remember when I went, it was very early 2000s, and it was often, oh, it's like self-harm. Try these strategies. Oh, it is anxiety-based. Try this medicine. Try this medicine. And I remember being in high school thinking to myself, oh my gosh, I'm taking five different pills and I'm not really seeing any difference. I need to wean off these. And so I eventually did, but it was one of those things where, after tweaking and upping this dosage and lowering this dosage, I not only felt unsuccessful because nothing was changing, but also I thought, is something truly wrong with me that nothing, even all of these pills, can help?
Exactly. And quite frankly, Barbara, I find myself cringing a little bit every time I hear some kind of, this is what's going to work, because I think it does set us up for that disappointment, that why aren't I, if this is the thing that when I come in and say, this is what I'm struggling with, and a medical professional says, here's what you should take for that. This is the best we've got. And you take it and it doesn't work, or doesn't work in the way that you had hoped it would, we turn it back on ourselves. And it's why am I the one person that this didn't work for? And I think, quite honestly, for me, and I'm a believer in medication, I definitely want it to, as I talk a little bit more about my philosophy and how I'm treating just my own personal condition, I think it's important that we use everything at our disposal, not just medications. So for me, it really has had to be a lifestyle thing where I take a look at almost everything to the point where I've got this little checklist. And whether I'm pulling excessively or I'm finding that my mood is starting to get a little unstable, there are these things that I just go through. And I don't know if these are the reasons why I start pulling or why these things happen, but it certainly can't hurt to ask yourself, am I drinking enough water? When's the last time I exercised? Have I been outside and seen any sunshine at all? When's the last time I called a friend? What's my diet looked like lately? As soon as I started kind of, in addition to taking my medication every day, the medication that I've worked with my team to manage my symptoms in the best way that I can, but what are all the other things I can do so that every time I have a little flare episode, whatever you want to call it, with the things that you deal with, I don't have someone layering on another medication. That was my biggest fear, was starting on one and then it works for a while, but then stops, or it's not quite doing what we want it to do. So someone adds something else. And now I can't tell, is it the new thing that's helping, or is it the placebo effect? Because I'm super excited about it. You kind of go through this. So for me, I want to get as targeted as I can with my medication while relying on it as little as I possibly can, and doing the work. It's hard work to do more than just wake up in the morning and take a pill. But we know that doesn't work anyway, 100%. So you might as well start pulling out some of our other tools that we all control, that don't cost anything, that we can all kind of be monitoring how we're treating our bodies, treating our bodies, treating our minds, and how that's lending itself to whether we're pulling, and if so, how much. My own personal, non-medical, non-researched, other than my own 30-year case study.
You mentioned using things like scarves to help cover up. And I know high school sucks. I mean, wow, high school always sucks. But can you tell me a little bit more about the things that you would do to try to hide your missing areas from your peers?
Oh, absolutely. And it was so funny. I kind of credit some of them to how you form your personality at that age. Hats ended up being big. And I found myself, in high school, I could wear the baseball hats. It was always, the during school, I would wear my hair up. When I was that age and that young, I still was pulling pretty strategically and only from the top of my head. So it was pretty easy for me to kind of pull up a hairstyle and always just be wearing a ponytail. People would kind of poke fun at, you always wear your hair in the same way. And I'd make up some just, oh, I just like it, or my, hair's a pain to deal with. This is just easier for me, all those different things. Then my pulling progressed, and instead of just being on the top of my head, I started pulling around the kind of temple area. And so that got harder to hide with hairstyles because you can't both wear your hair down and wear your hair up. So I'm wearing it up with sides down and starting to look, like for sure I'm hiding up something. And then the hats came into play. And by the time I was in college, I started getting to play with funky, just kind of fedoras and different hats. And I almost adopted a personality around just kind of this funky style, right? Because no one else wore hats like that. So I would wear hats, I would wear scarves, but I also noticed or found myself getting really standoffish and kind of holding people at arm's length. When you're wearing hats and that's the only thing between you and a bunch of 20-year-olds seeing the bald spots you pulled in your own head, you get super protective of who gives you a hug and who gets too close or who gets too rowdy around you. So definitely pulled out all the stops in high school and college trying to cover up my hair loss.
Did you know Habit Aware also offers virtual peer coaching? This one-to-one peer-based program will coach you through shifting mindset, practicing healthy strategies, and creating your personal roadmap to recovery. To work with me, Ellen, or Anila, head over to habitaware.com/coaching today.
And honestly, it wasn't until I was in my 30s and had had my kids and was making a little money, and I said, forget this, and started having wigs made. And that was the end of it. And since then, good, bad, or indifferent, I do notice that I try less. That's recently changed because I'm kind of in this fight again. But I think when I decided that, you know what, I can have fabulous hair that I put on in the morning, and I don't have to worry about who's looking at the top of my head, and I don't have to worry about all of these things. It just kind of became easier and it gave me license to pull. So the pulling definitely did not improve. It gave me that license, but quite frankly, my biggest stress and anxiety came from the fear of being found out or the shame of other people knowing I did the behavior. If it's just me and my partner who knows about this and is completely happy to live side by side with me, once I took away that pressure of other people seeing it, I actually became much happier and more, accepting of myself. Of course, it still gives me anxiety. Of course, I have repetitive stress injuries that have, as I've gotten older, are starting to pop up for me. When it gets really bad, no one likes having, almost cuts in their fingers because they've pulled for so long. So there are certainly still things that are distressing regarding the pulling. But in terms of the self-consciousness, I think both age and hair solutions put me in a place where I'm so secure and confident that it no longer really matters.
And you bring up such a great point of feeling as though you have to keep people away physically and emotionally because, say, the wind knocks the hat off, or my
Yes.
headband, I used to wear really thick headbands. If they get pushed and my bobby pins aren't working the way they're supposed to, that was the biggest fear. So I'm already stressed and very insecure and worried about this to the point where I have to cover it up. And now the covering it up is bringing even more anxiety and stress the situation because I'm now worried about that. It's layer upon layer of
So much
heaviness.
work. It's so much work. And that's why it's this emotional, mental, just terrorist almost. Like you just kind of, it's not even just about the pulling. There's that. There's the time you spend and kind of the private thing that happens. And then there's the shame of going out. Then there's the fear of the solution you've managed not working. And it goes on and it goes on and it goes on. And that's what makes it so exhausting and pushes at least me into periods where, when I've gone through a long period of pulling and of the mental gymnastics that are involved in keeping this, this little thing hidden, it's exhausting. And it's only when you kind of stop doing so much of it, you have to find the parts that work, right? We all pull from different places. We all have different goals in our lives and needs for, our needs are different. So we all have to kind of find what are those things that we can kind of relinquish. What part of this that can be uncomfortable can we become at peace with? And for me, it had to be the hair. It had to be the I've got to get over the I'm wearing a wig thing and just let it be. To the point where I've even gotten here recently, it used to be a lot of work. I didn't want people to know I was wearing a wig. So I was wearing a wig, but I wasn't ready to talk about the fact that I was wearing a wig. So it became very important to me that the length and the coloring didn't change too drastically, that it looked like if I saw someone and then didn't see them for a little bit, it could be a little longer then. But I went through a lot of lengths even when I started wearing wigs to kind of make sure that people didn't know. And now I'm like, I got long blonde ones, I got short dark ones, I've got everything in between. And it's more of a just fun, this is the mood I'm in right now, and you embrace it. And I say that with the understanding that being 17 and being 45 are two very different places. So if you're on the younger side, or if you're in your 20s and you're still trying to figure it out, you're already trying to figure out so much. Don't beat yourself up about not being to this place where you're just accepting and happy and love me the way I am. I was not there. I was not there through all of my teens and 20s. This is something that has come with age, and I promise will, if you kind of do the work and you stick with it and become at peace with yourself, it really will come. But I have to be careful about kind of what I say to people who just aren't in the same place as me, because it's frustrating. And it's upsetting, and I've been there, and I understand.
Did you ever feel, I know when you first were pulling, you showed your sister, hey, look at this. This is so cool. Were there
Yeah.
people in your life that you did feel comfortable really sharing about your trichotillomania?
You know, everything in my life happens when there's a meltdown. So I don't think I've ever in my life sat down to talk about my trichotillomania or any of my mental health struggles until I almost have to. And by have to, I just mean there's been a meltdown of some sort. I'm now in tears. You're close to me, and you're the person that I'm going to say this to now. So, the very first person I ever told was my best friend at the time, still a very, very dear friend of mine, was living in the States at the time, but her family moved back to England. She's in Switzerland now and is still a wonderful friend of mine. We see each other every few years, but she was the very first person who we sat in her bedroom in I don't know. It probably was our freshman year in high school, maybe. And something had happened. And she was the very first person I ever told about it. And I didn't tell anyone else until a boyfriend in college, where again, it was kind of some of the what I said at the time, some of my crazy was coming out. And I felt like I kind of had to say it so that he knew the seriousness or the, you know, kind of what I was dealing with. And then, of course, my husband. And for a very long time, those were the only three people that I'd ever sat down and had a, hey, I have this. Here's what it is. It's kind of crazy, but here we are. I found that to be easier than as time went on. And now I have plenty of people in my life who are familiar with it. I don't love talking about it in detail still. This actually is a very good exercise for me because it's letting me try it on all of the details. For years, I've been comfortable saying I have trichotillomania. I've gone to TLC's conferences. I've posted on the FRB Awareness Day. I've been comfortable saying it, but saying that I pull out the hair, look at the root, touch it to my lip, pull off the root, and discard it, that's the first time I'm saying that in any sort of public way. So, you know, you move and you move the bar all the time. And I think the more comfortable we become and the more people that are having regular lives that are going just fine, the more of us that kind of stand up and say, hey, over here, I think that will never be a bad thing for stigma.
I'm laughing because that's the first question I asked you. You're probably like, what did I get myself into? I'm like, do you rub it on your lips? That's the first thing I said.
And you know what? And I came into this and I was like, you know what? Share what you want to share. But also, if the question is asked, like, really think about it. Like, what are we doing here? I can sugarcoat something, sure. I can put a nice veneer on it and we can all be polite and say the things that just keep everyone comfortable. Or we can start having real conversations. And I know you've been doing it for years. This community has been doing this for years. I'm just showing up. I'm not introducing something new. People have been doing this. I think for me, maybe in the mid 90s, the late 90s, when it was kind of, I certainly didn't know anyone and no one was talking about this. I was so grateful to TLC for just saying the word and having a website. I mean, that saved my life, quite frankly, being able to go into a therapist's office and as a 19-year-old and say, you know, to have a printout from the website and here's what this is. So yeah, it's hard to talk about, but I think already I had decided, you know what? Let's be honest. And if you're asked, it is what it is. Thank you for asking me the question and making me talk about the thing.
Even in my own healing journey, when I first was really starting to be open about it and I'm sharing about it, I was still a little bit nervous to share certain elements and aspects. And one of the things I remember, because I shared it and I got so red in my face, I was blushing, was that sometimes I'll even pull from my bikini line.
Yeah,
And
over grooming.
I kept that a secret too, but that's something that is very common. And I only now know because I've shared about it like on TikTok and people are like, "Me too, I never said anything." I'm like, "I didn't either."
Because that's the one thing you don't want to say, you know? And it's so funny because for me, it's been part of this like grooming behavior. So for me, the eyelashes, the eyebrow, the bikini line, all of that kind of thing, those were more, if I don't look at it, I can control it better than the top of my head. The top of my head can happen any old time. I've got five triggers, and it doesn't matter if it's boredom, habit, stress, diet, all the things. I'm going to pull from the top of my head. I found that that focused tweezer pulling, that kind of getting up close and looking and doing the thing, if I put away the tweezers and I avoid the bright light and I avoid just kind of that first look, I've been able to keep that one a little bit more in check than I have the hair pulling. But you bring up such a good point. That would have been the thing. The only thing more uncomfortable to talk about than the brushing of the the root across the lip is why instead of just shaving, or why instead of just getting your eyebrows waxed, or why instead of just, you know, that kind of focused, tool-oriented, trance-like behavior. So, man, yeah.
Tell me about the first TLC conference that you went to.
Yeah, so this was pre-pandemic, and I honestly disengaged for a while after. I think, you know, I go through periods of trying to quit, and then I go through periods where I just want the entire issue so far from me as it can get. But I first went to the St. Louis. I'm trying to remember if the St. Louis or the Bay Area was the first one. It would have been like 2017, 18, or 2018, 19. But went to the St. Louis conference, and that was the one where I was still really incognito. In my personal life, I was away. My family obviously knew where I was, but I did not say a single thing to a single person in my life about, oh, I'm going to this conference. What I was interested in was the research and the education and meeting other people in the community. And I remember getting off the elevator at that hotel and suddenly seeing young girls, young women, people everywhere. I had my wig on. I'm all done up. I'm ready for this just weekend. And not wearing wigs, not wearing, just walking. And I remember it took, they looked exactly like me. Like when I went back up to my hotel room and took off my wig, that was 100% exactly what I looked like. But it took my breath away with a like clutch your pearls kind of moment. Like, oh my gosh, there are people here. It's a hotel. Like there are like regular people who aren't at this conference walking around. Like the idea of it back then, let me not even say back then. This is something I'm going to struggle with for a minute, and I'm going to try to get myself there. But I remember walking up and being embarrassed and ashamed and almost feeling like an imposter walking around that conference with that wig on. And there was one time I had to go up and just take a moment in my room, because I did feel just upset that I didn't have the courage to go down there and do it and risk running into someone I knew, or, you know, the judgment that I felt was coming across the room, and letting go of that identity that I felt like the safety of my hair gives me. But I remember having a very emotional reaction at that first conference when I realized just how brave this community was, how brave, how comfortable, how sitting in their own skin. At least some people were. That was what struck me about that first conference, for sure. By the second one, I think in the Bay Area, there was more of a push. We were trying to kind of the diversity aspect. So making sure that people of color felt welcome, in the community. So I know there were several of us who I've lost touch with, quite frankly, but there were a few of us who really worked with the outreach coordinator at the time at TLC. She was really working hard to kind of, change that narrative a little bit. So that was a great conference as well, where I volunteered for the first time. Instead of just being an attendee, I volunteered and was able to kind of engage a little bit more. So I don't know. Have they gone back on since kind of post-pandemic?
I think they're planning on having one this
Okay.
October, but I don't know
Okay.
where yet. It's kind of like whispers. Like, are we
Whisper.
in person? Because I really want to go really bad. So
Yes. Well, hopefully we'd get to meet face to face then.
that would be
Yeah.
amazing. Yeah, I remember my parents, TLC was huge for us too, growing up, being able to have that. It was called Trichotillomania Learning Center back then.
Yes.
And I think I even had, like, I don't know if it was a shirt made or it was the shirt that I got from my therapist. Anyway, it was like the special thing for me. And I remember my mom having the pamphlet and showing me, and I had a same reaction of clutch the pearls, like, no eyelashes, no eyebrows, like, oh my gosh, they do look just like me. I was still so much, I guess, in denial and didn't want to meet anybody. I was just like, I kind of viewed it as something I hated about myself. So I
Yeah.
wasn't interested in that sense. But I wish I went, because my healing journey might have turned out so differently had I met someone just like me in real life that young.
I agree. And so, I'm thinking if that was what, 5, 6 years ago. So, yeah, I was in my late 30s by the time I sat in a room with anyone else who had trichotillomania. And to the point where the only person I could even think of in my childhood, there was one little boy who lived next door to me. And at the time, it was, there's something different about his face, and I can't figure out what it is. As an adult, and realizing I had trichotillomania and thinking back on it, he didn't have eyelashes. I'm convinced he probably had trichotillomania. Maybe, I don't know. But the whole time I knew him, sometimes he'd have eyelashes, sometimes he wouldn't. I'm sitting there hiding my hair loss with hats and scarves and hairstyles and all sorts of things. And I wonder the exact same thing. If when I was younger, had I been in a room with other people with that raw emotion, the way I felt back then, how upsetting it was, how much I hated that about myself. How, if just that thing were different, I'd be so happy. I don't know if it would have been comforting to be around other people, but I like to think that it would have felt a lot less isolating. And unfortunately, I just never had, the knowledge or the resources until I was much, much older.